This is the Reading Aloud Podcast.
I'm Marisol Collette.
And I'm Adam Collette.
And you love us because we love you.
We sure do. And let's get to today's conversation.
Big week.
Big week.
Big week last week. Bigger week this week.
Bigger week. Yes.
Yeah, I would say yes. It's a bigger
yes.
week.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah,
bigger
yeah.
week.
Yeah.
And it could get bigger. Bigger. This is getting out of control.
It is going to be out of control.
Yeah.
Big week, bigger week, biggest, bigger.
Okay. We've lost 10 listeners already. They're like, yeah. What is this podcast?
Yeah, they love it. They love it. Bigger. How many times do you want to hear me say bigger? Bigger.
Lesser.
Bigger. We did the transfer.
We did the transfer.
That's just kind of bottom line.
Way to not bury the lead on that.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, just right up front.
You know, it's so interesting because we didn't talk about it the first time we did IVF. We kept it to ourselves, which is so interesting. I don't even remember why. I mean, we're recording the podcast and we're not saying anything about it and we save all this content. I don't remember. We must have just talked about other stuff.
We must. I mean, I think that was at a point in the journey of the podcast, which it's like where we were kind of more actively. We never plan on what we say, but we would brainstorm some things that we might like talk about.
Yeah.
You know,
we just specifically were not talking about IVF at all.
Right.
Like IVF at all, which when I reflect back, I think that I didn't necessarily think we were all that nervous about it. So I don't know why we kept private.
I think, you know, it was a newer process and...
I think it was the newness.
The newness around it, you know? And now, and I think it was pretty, it's pretty natural. Like, we talk about it so often now that I think it's kind of normalized for us, but it is also completely normal for, you know, somebody to be going through that, to not share it right off the bat.
I love that you're like explaining to me what a normal person does. You're like, it's also completely normal, Marisol, to not air your entire life out to the entire world. Duh. Yeah. And this is in fact what we do. Uh-huh. But we air our entire lives.
Yeah.
But this time we were like, oh, cool. Well, we'll talk about it. And then... Because we're using a surrogate. So it's a totally different experience. And it's been really, really helpful for a lot of people. It's a, you know, IVF is a, you know, alternative way to get pregnant to begin with. It's often a last ditch attempt.
That's right.
And then we're adding in another very unusual circumstance with a gestational carrier. And it's somebody we know really well.
Right.
And so we decided to talk about it. And then we had a loss. And that sucked. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this is what
it feels like. Well, we had a success. And then we talked about that. And then
Neo was a success. Yeah. But then I was like, oh, this is why people don't talk about it.
Share it so much.
Because it hurts so bad.
Right.
And...
Well, it's similar to like where... You typically don't talk about a pregnancy within the first 12 to 14 weeks.
See, but that's the thing. That's the thing. And that's why the comments that we get about this podcast have been so specific that it's like in some way, in some shape or form, people say it's stuff that people aren't willing to talk about publicly.
Right.
Even our internal struggles around communication, yep. our sex goal, our, you know, our fights that we have, all of that, all those vulnerabilities as a man, your vulnerabilities. And this is just an area where, I mean, it's still, and I've said this before, it shocks me that people don't, there are many people who have not shared their experience with miscarriage because it feels so, for a lot of people, it feels shameful. It's too painful. It feels, embarrassing, hopeless. You don't want comments. And so it is actually...
And I think a lot of people, you know, there's certain things, and miscarriage is one of them, where I think people feel like if I share it, I'm going to be some form of like Debbie Downer. Right? Like there's all this joy around pregnancy and, oh my God, you're pregnant. This is what, and it should be in a lot of ways. But at the same time, there's like this sense of, if I share that, I'm going to bring it down. I'm going to add a quote unquote dark side to just this like joyous thing of creating human life. And what I think that we need to begin to realize and embrace is that people actually want to hear that, because it's one of the things that we often say to folks, like, people want to help. People want to support you. And it can feel scary, but like so much, like when we've started sharing, it has helped us heal. It has helped others heal. It has just opened up this whole process. And so I don't know where that like feeling of being a Debbie Downer comes from.
Well, let me give you an example. Hey, well, you need to give Neo a sibling. I've had this said to me, right?
Like, oh, multiple times.
Neo needs a sibling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what? Right. So what are my options? Oh yeah, I know. Ha ha. Right. Okay. That's an option.
Yeah.
That's a lie.
Right.
That's me being dishonest.
Right. Which I have done.
Yeah.
I have done multiple times.
Yeah. Or the other option is, yeah, well, we tried. It's dead. You know, like that's the other option. That's the honest option. Nobody wants option number B. Then what? What are they supposed to say?
I mean, like,
oh shit, I was just trying to be nice.
Yeah. I mean, I hear it, and like context may matter a little bit.
I like option B.
We have established that. Yes, everybody knows that.
That I like option B.
Yes. You like option. I just mean like you will share quickly.
Yeah.
No, everybody knows you like option B to share.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing is like, so, you know, it is. So first of all, there is sacredness, right? Everybody has the right to keep things as private and secret as they want to. That's a beautiful thing to do, to hold things close to your heart that are very tender and in budding form,
right?
You know, and not blasting it with sunshine or exposing it to too much weather or getting too much other energy. So that's a great way of saying it. The real reason that most people don't talk about it, though, is for fear that if something goes wrong, what are they going to say? Then they have to explain to everybody in the midst of their grief.
Then they get into a conversation that they don't really have the energy for.
Right.
Because people don't know, you know, you have to be in a safe space, in a space where you can trust somebody. And sometimes that trust can come really quickly. Like, I've also experienced things where, like, I'm sitting next to somebody or like having almost just met somebody, you know, at a meeting, say, and they ask and I end up kind of telling them, but like it's I felt, I don't know, comfortable and safe in that space. And sometimes even people that I know, I just blow right past because I don't want the questions. I don't want to like sit there in 30 minutes and explain the whole IVF process and why we used a surrogate and what does that mean and is the baby actually ours and was it this and was that because was it because of a surrogate that it didn't make it, like all of that. I don't want to have to go through all that.
Totally.
That's what goes through my head, right? Like that's a lot of energy.
Oh, for sure. I do the same thing. You know, I mean, I pick and choose where I want to spend my energy, but the notion that we often are pregnant in silence for the first 12 weeks in isolation, you know, those are hard weeks. Your energy is low. It's a tender time, all this stuff. You're afraid of loss. If you want to be pregnant, you're afraid of loss, etc. But it is
fascinating. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'm interested in what you have to say because it is really, really lonely for a lot of people. And then you tell once it's viable, once it's a positive, once you're pretty sure that it's going to be a positive outcome in the pregnancy, then you can share it. Can't share the tenderness, can't share the grief if it doesn't work out, etc. For all the reasons that we talked about are people's choices. But I, you know, especially the older generation of people who are listening that have told me that they suffered in silence. It was not because they were having this sweet, intimate moment in their little family that they wanted to keep to themselves.
Right.
It's because it just was taboo.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing as we're actively right now, as we are having this conversation, it's amazing to me how taboo it is. And even I thought it's almost like something that's just a given, like you don't tell people in the first little bit, because then if you do, you have to tell them about the loss, and that is protecting yourself. But it is also like, I don't know, there's another side to that.
Babe, like our culture struggles with grief hard.
Yeah, like if you want to tell people, and then that's the way that you're going to process grief by telling people like about it, like you should be allowed to do that. But there are clearly unwritten rules that you shouldn't. It's just, yeah.
And more people are sharing, and people that I wouldn't have expected to share about it are sharing about infant loss and awareness around that. And I just really believe wholeheartedly that, you know, if somebody said to me, you know, if I asked the question, which I don't often ask unless it's somebody I'm really close with, I ask it in a way that opens up, like, even to hear the hard parts around decision making or around loss. But you know what's, you know, some version of, like, you know, what's your parenting journey like, what are your hopes and dreams and all of that. And then they say, you know, I would be, and somebody says, well, we tried but we lost it, I mean, I know exactly what to say in that. I mean, I just, it's like, shit, I'm so sorry.
Yeah,
we don't have, like, an awkward silence,
right?
Well, we did the transfer. I mean, we've been planning on it. We made the decision. I'm pretty sure one of the last podcasts where we talked about the baby was we made a decision.
Yeah.
But the thing is when you make a decision, it happens really fast. The person gets one period, you start the meds, 10 days later, they're here. You know, it happens quick. So it happened fast. And it was such a different experience than last time. Do you feel like it was so different? It was different in a lot of ways.
It was different in a lot of ways. It was, well, first off, there wasn't as much, for me personally, there wasn't as much anticipation. You know, I've talked on the podcast about how last time there was really, like, I was in my feels a lot about it. And this time I haven't been as much. But at the same time, like, there was a lightness around it that, and then there was, like, this kind of, for me, there was this kind of this excitement. So there wasn't as much nervousness or anticipation or questioning because we had already been through it, because I had already been through the experience. I knew kind of what to expect. But at the same time, I was feeling a little worried in the week before, and I talked to my therapist about this. Like, I was feeling a little worried about, like, how am I disconnected from this right now? But then when it started to happen, boy, I got, like, I was just so excited about it.
I think we had fairly different experiences. The first time we did this with our GC, with our gestational carrier, I did not have any questions. I was like, this is exactly how it's supposed to go. It's taken a very long time to get here. That's pretty much the only thing that was negative about it. But everything else has just, door after door has opened. This time, doors opened. It wasn't like there were any snafus. It just wasn't the same. There's just been way too much time on our hands, and brought up so many questions of, you know, just so many questions and exhaustion. So the night before, though, I was like crawling out of my skin. I was so uncomfortable, wanting it to just be done, feeling like I've waited 100 years for this. And we put, as always, a lot of intention. And we took some extra measures, like acupuncture, which is something the clinic really, really highly supported. Recommends.
Yeah.
And we did some of that stuff, and it ended up just feeling really, yeah, like we were doing a lot to support this process. But I was really anxious. And then we pulled some Oracle cards, and they were so settling. And
which you have been very connected to through this
deck.
Process.
Yeah, that particular deck. It was incredible. And I was like, okay, the signs are very clear. Mm-hmm. And a friend pulled a card from her deck, and that one just said, follow the path that you have created and just wait and see.
Mm-hmm.
Also very reassuring. And we, our GC and I took a walk that night, and there was this beautiful moon with this enormous ring around it. It felt like it was calling to us. Just beautiful signs. And then, I mean, I don't even know how to describe this, and I don't think I want to talk about it too much, because I'm not interested in trying to convince anybody. But Neo was having a hard night in a way that we haven't seen him have.
Mm-hmm.
It was really different. And I've always known that. It was funny when you came down after comforting him, you were like, I don't know that I would have told you that I really believed in child's intuition quite like this. You were like, but he knows, he really knows, and he's working through his feelings.
I never had an experience like that. So he was, not crying. He was sobbing in my chest in the bed. And this is late. You know, it's like he's been asleep already. He's been upstairs. Like, this is, you know, 9:30 at night or something. He's already been in bed for an hour plus. And he woke up and he was crying. And he was like sobbing in my chest, but not like sobbing because, you know, I took a bite of his pizza and he didn't want me to do that, you know, or something like that, like some toddler crying. This was like very, this was emotional. This was very deep. He was like, and it wasn't scared. It was just, I mean, he was experiencing like deep, it just felt like grief, you know, about it. And I didn't talk too much to him. I really just held him. Just held him, you know, told him it was going to be okay, and just held him and let him cry, literally, until he fell asleep. And boy, talk about, like, emotions running in me. And not in the way of, like, we shouldn't do this. Just in the way of, like, overwhelmed with the power of that experience. Like, overwhelmed and almost in awe. Honestly, I came down. That's how I would have described myself when I came back down. I was in awe of what I felt like I just experienced. I was in awe of the way in which Neo was so raw in that moment. And it was like this display of human intuition, emotion, that, again, pure and raw. And I like got to hold it. And I felt like honored at that time. I didn't feel scared. I felt honored to be able to do that.
So again, first of all, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. I know exactly what you're saying. And if it wasn't my child, I would feel the same. When I'm listening to you, I would be like, wow, what an incredible gift. And I would say to you the same things that you and our GC and one other friend said to me, which was, it is grief. He has to grieve. It's a change. And, you know, people have said to me that that whatever the outcome of this is, we will grieve either way, you and I, because you will lose something, something will change, and you will lose something on either end. And, you know, for good and and there will be lots of ways in which you miss those things. But, you know, and then my other friend, speaking of therapists, who said she's a therapist, and she was said, no, it's so beautiful that he knows how to grieve, that he knows that he's safe to do that, that he has access to that level of feeling, and that you all have provided that safety for him to be able to do that with you. Mm-hmm. But boy, my heart broke. I mean, because I had been feeling so unsteady.
Yeah.
It was like the card pull, the moon, everything felt settled. And then I was like, I'm breaking his heart. I'm ruining his life.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's still hard for me to talk about because we did it. And I know, you know, a lot of people are like, it's okay. Just you can do it. You just do it. You just kind of close your eyes. You say yes to the process and you do it. Well, that's different when you've been working on this for 7 years. It's different when every day you have a choice to make, and it's not, you even have a choice as to what day you do it. It's not,
right.
There's not a lot of, you know, luck or
right.
chance involved.
Yeah. We've had so many more conscious,
it's exhausting.
Weighted decision points in this. It's exhausting.
And we had the option not to do this.
Right.
And
which we considered. Let's
well, of
just
course.
Be clear.
Oh, well, of course we talked about that. But you know, it's so funny that you said that about the intuition, because I have told you many times that him and I are having different kinds of conversations, and he knows. I mean, there was the time when I asked him if he wanted a baby brother. He said yes. I said, what's his name? And he spelled it. Do you not? I mean, like, you say like, oh, you're finally convinced because you had this lived experience, but he spelled it. He didn't spell it in the right order, but he used only the letters of the name that we had chosen for the other baby.
Although, quick aside, Neo story, I was washing his hands today in the downstairs bathroom sink. And you know the little like drain holes mm-hmm. at the top of the sink? Well, our sink has just three little mm-hmm. ones. And he was like, three holes. And I was like, how do you know? I mean, like, mm-hmm. good counting, buddy. Mm-hmm. I was impressed. Mm-hmm. But anyway, no, he does not spell. He mm-hmm. might count holes, but he doesn't
He
spell.
Knows his letter. Mm-hmm. He knows that Neo starts with N, Mama starts with mm-hmm. M, and Papa starts with O.
Oh, no, you're right. I'm O.
Every time.
He's like, Papa's letter.
Every time.
Oh, it's magic.
But the thing is,
I hear you, but like, it's just different when, mm-hmm. like, that experience was just so powerful mm-hmm. for me. And yeah, I've heard you say that, and like, I don't, you know, when it happens to you, it's just mm-hmm. different. Mm-hmm. And at that level, like, just, I can't, like, the emotion in me. I have discovered this. I take this in a slightly different direction, but bring it back around. I have discovered in myself and some kind of personal work that I'm doing that I'm getting to know more and more my very unique relationship that I have to Neo and how I myself respond to him, how I am showing up for him differently than I show up for other relationships.
Any other relationship.
And so, I don't know, that was just a really, like, just so to have that personal experience and to be able to have him grieve and just, you know, I felt really, like, calm and peaceful and strong. It was also, like, a good personal growth moment for me. Like, he helped me see something in that moment of what I am capable of doing. Hmm. And so all of that, like, I am capable of holding grief like that with strength and poise and not worrying or fretting or reacting. And maybe I have done that before, maybe not. Like, I think I probably have in some instances. But nonetheless, it's like I was just able to, like, there wasn't ever a question. And he did that. He went right back to sleep and we moved on. And yeah, there was a change in that for me.
Yeah. No, it's beautiful, babe. I mean, and I know I hear what you're saying. And I just, what is more important is the moment that you had. I just thought, as an aside, I thought it was interesting to hear. I never really thought, but knowing all that I've shared about different ways that I've experienced his deep knowing, but babe, it's beautiful, and you're right. You showed up for him. You showed up and you held that space and you knew what it was and you did it without interrupting. You didn't interrupt him, which is really important when somebody is having a deep emotional experience, that you don't insert yourself. It takes the person off track and can leave, you know, kind of bring them out of their experience, pop them back into reality and truncate the experience,
because
then all of a sudden they're attending to you or paying attention to you or listening to what you're saying or figuring out how to respond.
And their emotion just goes even deeper kind of down in. Yeah.
It's beautiful, babe. It's beautiful. It did break my heart.
Yeah. It definitely broke your heart.
And then the next morning I woke up and I was totally relaxed. I felt very peaceful until we were about 40 minutes out from where we were headed, and I started getting so antsy, crawling out of my skin. We got there and they were running 3 hours behind.
Which is wild. And for those that know IVF, like, timing is very important. Like, you take shots, you take pills.
At the same time every day.
At the same time, you take different shots, like a very specific number of hours before, you know, the whole thing.
And but you know, I don't want to get into the science of it all. If you know, other people need to know, they can look it up. But it is, if people want to understand more, they can look it up. But it is really interesting because it didn't change anything. It just made us wait a really long time, but it didn't change anything.
Correct.
But and then when they did IVF with me, when they did the transfer with me with Neo, you know, once they start to unthaw the baby from the cryo bank, it, you see it in the form that they preserved, that they put it into the cryo bank in. So they had, it had busted out of its little blastocyst, or it had become a blastocyst. So it busted out of its little round shell, and the, it was, began multiplying. So they took a picture of it when they thawed it out. And then they took a picture of it again right before we did the transfer, and the cells had multiplied. With Neo, they were, I don't even know if they took the, they couldn't even show
we
us a picture.
We never saw a picture.
They didn't show us the current picture. They were like, you need to lay down. This baby needs a home. Things are multiplying, and like, lay down.
It's going to bust out of the test tube.
Exactly. Yeah. It's going to grow into a human in this test tube if you don't lay down right now.
Right.
But with the baby over the summer, they, you know, we got this picture, it was put up on the screen, it's very slow, and they didn't make that kind of comment.
Yeah.
And this time they showed us, they were very proud. They were like, look, this is where it started this morning. This is where it is right now. You can see it's already multiplying. So it was more similar to the experience with Neo.
Yeah, and it's crazy. They literally, like, after they show you these pictures, I mean, they bring it in. I mean, the whole thing takes, when you're actually in there, it takes 8 minutes, right. You know. But they bring it in, you know, like the embryologist just like walks it in the room and hands it to the doctor.
It's wild.
And he, you know,
does she it. She was so fluffy.
And yeah, and man, it's
and it kind of took off.
Yeah, it took
we
off.
Watched it kind of like find its little home on its own.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was so bright. And we asked, really, are they all this bright? And the one of our favorite PAs there, she was like, yeah, they're bright like that because of the saline. Before she said that, our GC was like, was it this bright last time? And she was like, no. And you were like, no, definitely no. Not.
I mean, we could go back.
We could.
I have both videos.
Videos of both. That's right.
Yeah.
And the doctor, he said, there's your little rising star.
I know.
Just so funny because we have an inside joke about Rising Star and Cracker Barrel. So we were joking about that. But it was different because we were 3 hours behind. We were tired. We were more anxious.
We've been in that.
It was a little more chaotic. We didn't sing. We tried to like throw in Peace Like a River at the end like last time. It was not spiritual. We didn't have our rocks. We didn't have
it was
hardly anything.
Yeah,
I forgot the cards in the car.
We were so intentional, you know, but this time was just like, it was like, you know.
Second baby stuff.
Get your toenails clipped or something.
Oh my gosh. Go get groomed.
Yeah. But it was, I mean, whatever happens, happens. And I feel in whatever way, and, you know, the journey will continue in both directions, especially if the baby sticks and we have a second kid. But through that, like the IVF stuff, I feel complete. Mm-hmm. That was a fitting end to that part of the journey.
To the IVF part.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah.
The other thing that I don't think we've talked about enough, and I don't think everybody was sort of like, oh, cool, you and her. But I have continued to think about this. I just think it's amazing. So we had the moon, and then we went out to lunch, the moon situation the night before, and we went out to lunch, and you were like, oh, a little old shine bright. And she's like, oh, yeah. And she kind of casually was like, oh, you know, anytime my youngest kid gets a new baby doll or holds a baby or whatever, she always names it Shine Bright in the Moonlight. And I was like, wait, what? Because the moon was such a big part of our calming, our sense of like that we had been given a sign and a gift. And then you randomly came up with little old Shine Bright. Shine Bright.
Shine Bright.
Well, but that's not a real word.
Well, I mean, it's two real words put together in an unreal order.
Right, unreal order. Same as her own child put it. Shine bright, and not just baby shine bright, because that would have been weird enough that she calls all her babies baby shine bright, because you did. But shine bright in the moonlight. And nobody talked about it after that. I literally think about it all the time. You don't think it's weird?
I think it's coincidence.
Oh my God. Oh my God. What is
it? I guess I have to have a personal experience about it.
That's what I was going to try to say. You did have a personal experience about it, but what is it that you're missing? How wild that is. Oh my gosh. You have no depth. Just end the podcast there.
Just a shallow puddle of tadpoles.
A shallow puddle of tadpoles. You have no depth. What do you mean? I want you to get as worked up as me.
Gosh, this is amazing.
Oh my God, I
Shine
hate you.
Bright in the moonlight.
I hate you. I hate you. Why would you not think it's... You don't think that's so weird?
Let me just say, the picture of the moon that you all took is like a professional... I mean, it looks so good and it's so powerful.
You don't change the subject.
I'm just saying this is... I feel very moved by that picture.
Not by the fact that you named the baby Shine Bright. Two words that do not often go together in
Shine
that
Shine Bright
order.
Because it was shining so brightly on the monitor.
Babe, I get it. And I know. Her child. Her not child. Somebody else's kid. Her own child says Shine
we're
Bright.
So connected.
I know, but you just pass that up. That is a miraculous moment. You just pass it up. All right, well, we will find out on Tuesday. You know, I can't end this podcast without saying something, and I don't feel like I have all the facts straight because I haven't done enough of my research, but I really want to talk about Alabama for a minute.
I think we should.
Because here we are getting to like joke around and talk about it. And of course, I've had lots of feelings when we talk about we were going to make a choice. We weren't sure because there are people who want this so badly and would love to have the opportunity to take things as far as we've taken them. And I'm so deeply aware of that. And my speaking of heartbreak, my heart breaks for these families who lost so many opportunities and who are continuing to lose opportunities. And I'm going to go ahead and just say what I understand about it, knowing that I don't have all the facts. But my understanding is that somehow someone was from in the hospital, because it's in a hospital, was able to get into where the cryobank is. This doesn't make sense to me because I can't imagine there aren't multiple measures, but this person got in, a patient in the hospital, maybe they were, you know, very medically and or mentally ill, and they went in there, they open it, which again, I'm like, is there not a code? They open it and it's so cold that it burns them, obviously, because we're talking sub 300?
Something like that, yeah.
And they drop it. They drop it. I just that is devastating. People prepared to do transfers the very next day, the following week, etc. All the money, the time, the energy, the fact that might have been their only ability to get eggs, etc. So the people who were part of that clinic are suing the clinic for negligence, for not having more safety measures, so something like that couldn't happen. And now Republican lawmakers in Alabama are using this, they're leveraging this, they're capitalizing on this to say, see, these embryos, like 5-day-old embryos, have a right to life. They're using it as a pro-life claim because these people are devastated that they lost their embryos. What I know is they're devastated that they lost the possibility of one of them being able to become their child. But they're flipping the script. And then now all these heartbroken families who deserve compensation for what they lost, because you can't even compensate for that, but deserve at least financial compensation for what they lost, are being just, you know, crushed. And now people can't get what they want. They can't, what do they put, like an indefinite pause on IVF? This is Handmaid's Tale.
Mm-hmm.
This is where embryos are going to start getting passed out. Oh, everybody who has an embryo, of course, think about folks who can afford this, right? Oh, there we go. And we're going to Handmaid's Tale them all. Everybody's going to have babies. Or you're going to be forced to have your babies. All of them. Anyone that's left in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's time to send our one to research, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me, it is a incredibly frightening and gross overreach of power.
And tragic.
Yeah, it's absolutely tragic. And the hypocrisy to me around, like the political hypocrisy around the same folks who are kind of passing or promoting these very heavy-handed, restricted, like a small group of people making decisions for a large amount of people, like kind of type of policies, are the same ones that are also promoting like smaller government, you know, or we shouldn't have public programs like PBS and libraries, mm-hmm. you know, and we need to defund those things because like it's government overreach or public investing in public education or something like that, you know. Or having everybody having healthcare or something like that, like us, the only country in the world. So it's just wild, and it is so blatant, and it hits home for us because of the IVF, because of what we have been through. And it's interesting to like think about how far are people willing to take this? Like, are, you think about like a slippery slope kind of argument. Well, after the Supreme Court ruling, overturn of Roe v. Wade, all these state bans were at 6 weeks. You know, most of the state bans were at 6 weeks. Well, now this IVF thing takes it to a whole different thing because those embryos are 5 days old. And to do the whole process, you have to create multiple of them just to see if one's viable. For example, our last transfer, we had 10 embryos. We did genetic testing on them. One of them was considered viable with life, but our first one, we had 7 and 4.
Compatible with life.
That's at least how they genetically tested. Mm-hmm. But they had like genetic abnormalities and defects and, you know.
I mean, most of the embryos that we created were not going to survive.
And to take this opportunity away from people of which modern science has provided us and to regulate it under this like weird concept of the world is just criminal to me. Mm-hmm. It's criminal. And it is completely anti everything that it's a complete control over people in the name of something that doesn't align with what they are talking about. Like the whole Christian nationalism thing is just crazy.
Yeah. I will say this feels like a reach because basically they're saying, oh, you want to sue them for losing these embryos. Then you're basically saying they're all children, you know, and it's just amazing to me. It is amazing to me that, like, what a bastardization of these people's pain.
Right. Yeah.
So I didn't feel like I could talk about this without, you know, acknowledging where other people are at in this process. Also that for many, this doesn't work out and it doesn't work out well. And in order to even have the opportunity, it takes often people's life savings or loans or asking family members. And it's so much money invested into wanting to have a family, which is also part of the weird thing, because why are they stopping this if the whole idea is it's ridiculous. I need to do more research on it, but to really fully understand every detail. But I feel fortunate. And when we did it,
even if you don't know all the details, the ethics around this are there. The moralness of this is there. And I think that is what is we're commenting on.
Yeah, of course. When we did our when we did it, I was a little in shock. I was like, oh my gosh, we just did. This was so different than last time. Last time I was like, we did this, we knew it, this was the right thing to do. Not with Neo, this past summer, the first time we tried with our GC. We knew it, this was what's supposed to be. This was our second genetically normal of embryo of all that we had, and that's it. And it just felt so right and then so clear. And then this time I was like, oh my gosh, we just did that. We just made that decision. We made it's over.
It's over.
We made the decision.
We walked through, there are no going back now.
Right. And then I was like, okay, well, I'm definitely not going to question whether or not it's the right decision. It just is.
Because it's made. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's done. It's done and it's great. Whatever happens, we will find out.
And you will find out on the podcast.
How do you feel about the fact that Neo consistently says he wants a baby sister? You want a baby brother? No, baby sister. Over and over and over again. I can't disappoint him like that.
He'll be okay. I mean, I don't know. But again, that decision's been made.
I hate that he wants something as big as that. That he knows something. It's just like he didn't want any siblings. He just wants to rock out in this world and just be willful and independent.
And he'll have, well, potentially he will have a baby brother to do that with. Little bro to do that with.
We'll see.
Yeah.
All right.
Love you.
Love you.
Thanks, y'all, for listening and participating. We always have a great time with you.
And if you enjoy the podcast, please go online and rate, review, share this with your friends. This is the way that we build this community.
Yeah.
All right.
Bye.